there.
One of my problems too with money is like I am a miser, but like when I buy something, I buy it, right? Like, so when I buy something, it's like, oh no, this is going to be hundreds of dollars. This is going to be thousands of dollars, right? Ashley might nickel and dime me, but I'm like, babe, what about this?
You know, you should apply that with your golf game because your driver is like 25 years old. So I can definitely support the fact that you're not an impulse guy. I think I've had 17 since you bought that last one. So
our goal on this podcast is to know Jesus better and by the power of his spirit, do better. So together we can be a little better. Well, welcome to A Little Better. So glad to have you back for week two of Money Matters. And I got to say, I've been looking forward to this series for a long time. I love the way it kicked off last week, and it just keeps going. So today, if you're not watching us, you don't realize that we have as a guest Nate Wegman, who plays, he's got so many roles, influences, you know, here. Professionally, he's a financial planner, but he gives that expertise for free to us by serving on the stewardship team, by advising us in some financial matters, and teaching Financial Peace University for years. Well, I'll ask him more about that later. And if you were online, you got to meet Nate already. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's get to it. Drew did give a message. And Drew, how about recapping what we covered this week in 60?
Yeah, we're continuing to dive into how we steward God's money well. And ultimately, the crutch of the message was five principles to steward his money well. So spending wisely, avoiding debt, saving diligently, then investing for your future, and giving generously. And so we just talked about how all of those play out in our lives, how when we truly do spend wisely, it helps us to avoid debt, which creates a buffer in our budget to save. And then that kind of breeds peace in our life. It kind of builds a little bit of security in our lives. So now we can look towards the future rather than paying for the past by investing and building for the future. So in our budgets, we can help others and be generous. The Bible says it's more blessed to give than it is receive. And so really practical sermon on managing God's money.
Yeah, I loved that. And I know you kicked off this whole series with just an alarming statistic to me, which was 88% of Americans are experiencing financial stress. Mm. Really, only 12%, you know, are not living with enough buffer, I guess we would say, or a plan or intentionality for that kind of peace of mind. So I was looking at some other statistics about American finances, that some that, you know, surprised me, but you guys are the experts. So I figured I'd let you kind of guess, and we'll see how close you get to a few answers here. But what do you guys think is the average credit card debt?
You talking about household, like amount?
Yeah, the amount, the balance, the debt carried on credit cards.
17,000.
You think? Are you seriously think that?
Well, yeah, it is 17,000 because I shared that week one. It's around 17,000.
That's where I got the number. I was paying attention.
Okay, I'm not going to correct you. I got a different number here.
What's your number?
6,000.
Yeah, is that? Yeah, it is 6,000.
Well, no, that's what I would have guessed had I not seen Drew's answer from week one.
But, interesting.
Well, it might be different because that 17,000 is only 70%, and so it probably is different based off of the other numbers.
It might be skewed towards the people who are actually carrying the debt.
Yeah.
So there's another thing here is, how about median? And you got to kind of know what statistics mean. Mm-hmm. Median. Nate's nodding. He knows.
Yeah,
median retirement savings balance for Americans aged 55 to 64. So they're close. They're close to retirement. And what do you think their median retirement savings are? What's interesting is median is very different than average. We'll talk about that in a minute. But median, what would you guess?
I'm going to say 300,000.
Okay.
I'm going to say about 82,000.
Between your two, okay, you bracketed it. I've got two different sources that both say 185,000. Okay. What's interesting about median, as you know, is like half the population is below that and half the population is above that.
Yeah, not the
but
average.
The average is much higher.
Correct.
The average is closer to 700,000, which means we've got, you know, the lower 50% is very poor, you know, and the top 50% is skewed way high.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's, yeah, okay. How about, this is the last one I'll do. Average cost of a wedding in the U.S.
Oh, man.
Gosh. Wow.
average. So
in the year, average, in the US.
How much did I pay? I paid $5,000, but
I
ding 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 ding.
Really?
You paid $5,000.
I did.
I think my daughter paid $5,000.
It was 14 years ago.
That's the average.
No, I said ding ding ding, but just no. Well done.
35 to 45, maybe.
I would say. I want to go higher because there's some really expensive weddings. I'm going to say 25,000.
Okay. Well, Nate is the expert. And once again, he nails it at 35,000. You said 35 to 40, but 35,000.
You beat me. I was going 30, 35.
Which interesting is
$1, Bob.
Yeah.
$1.
What's interesting, the last year it did drop a little bit. It has been 35 and dropping to 30, but so people maybe are getting a little smarter. But that, you imagine?
All the people with boys say praise the Lord, right?
Oh,
amen.
Oh, my goodness.
I can't
$35,000.
No.
So I don't know who we're talking to out there.
That's a nice brand.
Apparently half the people we're talking to spent more than that and half spent less. It just blows my mind that, they probably didn't talk to Nate before planning that wedding, did they? No. Okay.
Well, and they are not going to.
Probably not. Well, listen, let's get to it. I mean, we're talking, I love the practical, way we're talking about money. I just think it's refreshing when a church gets real, about life, whether it's, issues, but, it's real life. And Jesus was about real life, and the scriptures are about real life, certainly with regard to money. So why do you think so many people are stressed about finances? Like even people who are financially stable, you would think, why? I mean, it's not just the people who are poor who are stressed. Why do you think so many people are stressed over finances?
I'll let Nate tackle this from like a financial planner standpoint. I'll attack this from like a spiritual standpoint. Mm-hmm. I think the root cause is, we've put our hope in something that isn't stable. We've put our hope in something that we've made money an idol in our lives, and we are hoping that. And I talked about this in the message. Like we hope that money will fulfill us, possessions will fulfill us, mm-hmm. and they just don't. They might for a season. Like we feel good about it, mm-hmm. but eventually they lead us to wanting the next best thing or more. And so, I just think we have taken God out of his rightful place, and we've put money, possessions as idols there. And what that does is it causes us to be on unstable ground. And so it creates anxiety, worry, stress about money or possessions.
Yeah, Nate, you've probably seen people who are even better off. You still see them stressed?
Yeah, I was going to kind of piggyback what Drew said. Clearly, somebody that is living paycheck to paycheck, doesn't have a lot of savings, they have a lot of debt, they're stressed because what's coming next? I don't know what's happening next. I hope I can do X, Y, and Z. And just because somebody might have more savings or more money or maybe a little less debt doesn't necessarily take away that type of anxiety because they now have this particular understanding of level where they're at. And they're saying, okay, well, if this changes or drops below this amount, then I start to stress out. Mm-hmm. I'll talk to people that will come into my office and they're starting from the ground up. And, hey, this is how I've lived. This is what's going on. I know I need to make some changes. I want to get started. I want to start building, some type of emergency account and stuff like that. And yeah, there's stress in their life, but they've lived like that. It's okay. And then I'll have somebody come in that, I don't know, maybe has over $100,000 in cash in the bank. And when I tell them that they have too much cash in the bank and we should do something with that, they get really nervous because they've created this comfort blanket around them and this idea that this money is what's going to protect me from the things that are happening in the world, which it does. It creates that buffer from the world coming in and doing something crazy and their furnace breaks. Well, they can pay for it, And so they don't have the same stresses. But they've kind of, like you said, they've kind of put their faith and trust in this particular object. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter what level it's at. Once they're comfortable at a certain level, when things change, that's when people get stressed out.
Yeah, so three S's I talked about in the message, right? Like we want money to provide security.
Mm-hmm.
We want money to save us, right? Salvation, save me from my circumstances, my mm-hmm. poverty, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then satisfaction. I want money to provide those. And what happens is we look to money or possessions to provide those things when ultimately that's God's job in our life. Mm-hmm. And so it just, you know, depending on where you are financially, you're chasing after one of those S's. It just looks different based off of people's financial pictures.
Yeah, I certainly resonate with that idea of it being a heart issue. And I think I would go from the position of, I need to trust in God and not money, you know? And I think I would go from the position of saying, yeah, that's not a problem with for me. Of course I trust in God, to realizing, hey, I trust in money more than I'm willing to admit. Yeah. You know, I need to learn that. And third, getting to that place of trust. Because I know for me, many years ago, I think it was 2001, there was an internet stock kind of bust. And, you know, I saw my money. I would say, hey, I have no problem. I trust in God. Everything's good, right? And when that, I couldn't sleep. I mean, it dropped and it was just like, holy cow, I'm worshiping money. My trust is in money. I'm so anxious.
Yep.
And it surprised me, but I had to admit, you know, and so even it's always a temptation, poor or rich, right? You know, poor to think money's going to solve your problems, or rich to trust money to keep you from problems.
Yeah. My dad was really good at teaching us as kids, like one way to like counteract this is no matter where you are financially. So my dad would tell stories of like when they were so poor and he would say, God, thank you that we are so poor. We need you. Mm. And then when he became more spiritual, or when he became more successful in his business, anytime he would be able to pay for something, he would say, God, thank you for providing this for us. So it was always connected to God, not his achievement, not like no matter what place he found himself in, he was thanking God for both blessings, right? The blessing of poverty, you recognizing your dependence on God and thanking God for his provision. Yeah. And so I just thought my dad was really good at just reminding, like, this is a God thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Drew, you had mentioned spending wisely and resisting the pull of marketing. I mean, there is quite an industry, I mean, that thrives on sucking money out of us, right? In terms of the decisions we make. So Nate, as a professional and just trying to help people in life, what's the most common trap or traps that you see people fall into?
Well, first and foremost, professional or not, it's a trap for everybody. I would say probably the hardest thing, even my own personal life, is impulse buying. And I'll see something that's just the cool, I'm a gadget guy. So I see something that's the coolest gadget in the world. I'm like, oh my gosh, how have I survived to this point without this? Clearly I need this. And then I buy it. And then a year later, like I couldn't even tell you what I bought. And then it's just like, what in the world did I just spend my money on?
Yeah.
But I think that is, America is designed for consumers, for consumption. Mm-hmm. The stock market is companies that need to make money and they need to make profit. And when the stock markets are going up, companies are making money. Well, how are they making money? Because they keep selling to us. So it's like this big circle. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would say impulse buying is probably a huge issue for most people. Yeah. And if they tell you that they're not, they probably are.
And I'll give one on the other end. I'm not an impulse buyer. I'm like a researcher, a miser. So like, I'm not the spender in our household, right? Like I'm constantly nagging Ashley for like, why did you buy that on Amazon? Or she even will come back from Goodwill with clothes. And I'm like, babe, you realize if you go to Goodwill that much, you're still spending a decent amount of money, right? That's just who I am. So for me, the trap I fall into, again, a little more spiritual, is like, if I have enough in the bank, I'm secure. And I think a lot of people buy that lie of like at any moment, one accident can wipe that out, right? Mm-hmm. Can take that away. And so like, again, it's the spiritual side of like, man, the trap I fall is like, I can make myself secure when only God can.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm on the flip side of that. I'm also the impulse buyer. So it's interesting because we are encouraging people to do Financial Peace University, and we've made it possible for people at Northridge, go to iwant.info and click through our groups are going through Financial Peace University. And this will be the third time that Karen and I have gone through it, but it's a benefit because we drift, you know, and for Karen, She's already counting how many subscriptions I have to different things. Those are the things that just, she said, I think it's 130 a month. I'm like, no, it's not 130 a month. But you start adding it up. If you've got Disney Plus and Netflix, it adds up. So it's so good for me, you know, just to get on the radar with those practical budgeting tools, have the budget committee meeting, whatnot. That's just a plug for Financial Peace University. It's available. It's a great value for everyone out there.
One of my problems doing money is like I am a miser, but like when I buy something, I buy it, right? Like, so when I buy something, it's like, oh no, this is going to be hundreds of dollars. This is going to be thousands of dollars, right? Might nickel and dime me, but I'm like, babe, what about this?
You know, you should apply that with your golf game because your driver is like 25 years old. So I can definitely support the fact that you're not an impulse guy. I think I've had 17 since you've bought that last one. So
The only difference good for you. Only difference between men and boys is the price of their toys, right? So we do rack up some significant items. Let's see, Drew, I think you talked about debt and just how dangerous that is. And just, I mean, there's scriptures that describe it as, you know, putting chains around us and the rest. I mean, I think most people are wondering, they've heard there's good debt. I mean, Nate or Drew, I mean, what would you counsel in terms of, is there good debt? Is there bad debt? How should we think about that?
Yeah, there's definitely a difference between debt. So the easiest way to kind of understand it is if whatever it is that you're purchasing is an asset that goes into your name and can grow in value, for instance, a house, if you're going to buy a house and you take out a mortgage, yeah, that's a debt. And the amount of interest that you're going to pay over a 30-year mortgage is a lot when you think about it. Mm-hmm. Even over 15, it's still a lot of money of interest, but that asset is your asset. And every time you make that payment, you get more equity from that asset. It's something that's going to typically appreciate over time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, if you're going to buy a car, a brand new car, and you finance it, you're going to pay for a vehicle or an item that will immediately start depreciating. So if I had to choose between which debt would I choose in that scenario, I want the asset that's going to grow so that after I'm done paying that that debt off,
yep,
I still have the asset that I can go out and sell if I need to. I think in 2019, I bought a practice and it was the largest loan I've ever taken in my life, but it was debt. But it's good debt because it immediately started paying income to me and my family. And it's an asset that someday I can go ahead and sell again. Mm-hmm. So I'm not worried about that type of debt, but you know, consumer debt, when you're just buying something that's you're going to consume and be done with, or you're going to buy and by the time you're done paying it off, it's worth nothing. You know, those are the types that we like to try to stay away from.
Yeah. So like bad debt, always bad debt, credit card debt, right?
Absolutely.
The interest rates you're paying, it's just astronomical. And usually you're buying things that don't grow. I like to look at it like this. Good debt makes me money. Bad debt loses me money.
Correct.
Like it's pretty simple. And like bad debt is also, I'm spending money on something I want that I don't need. Right. That's, I would say bad debt. Right now there are times where, yeah, like, hey, sometimes you need a car, you're in a bad situation and you've got to incur debt, right? There are mm-hmm. times where debt is actually helpful because it enables you to buy something maybe you can't afford. But again, those like bars, we got to be careful. Like don't buy the best car, right? Like debt is, you know, based off of something that it costs. So like go in debt, but go at the minimum amount, not the maximum amount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't, obviously it would be naive to think that everybody has enough cash put aside to cover an emergency.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So clearly if somebody's just hearing this message and they say, you know what, I want to start managing my finances a little bit different, but then tomorrow their furnace breaks, then they're like, oh, I can't buy a furnace because I didn't have any money saved up. They're probably going to have to go put it on a credit card or do something like that.
Gotta live.
I understand that happens. Life happens. So mm-hmm. it's not about, listen, never use your credit card ever again because, you know, you heard this message, so instantly everything's going to change for you.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. It's understanding, okay, I don't want this to be a pattern. So at this point, how do I now start working towards and changing things in my life that one, I can get out of this debt as soon as possible, but then two, I can set it up so that I don't run into the same problem the next time. And I think that's the problem most people have is that by the time they get through a particular situation, they don't make the other changes needed to build that buffer in their life so that we can avoid some of the issues down the road.
And I would say parents, like I actually believe it's your responsibility to help your kids understand this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think of college for all the young people out there. Like, where you go to college, like, it matters because it, the cost can be dramatically different, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, for us living in New York, SUNY schools are free, right? So, you can... The name on the college when you go to hire someone doesn't matter a whole lot. Some rare cases it might, but realistically, where you get your degree from isn't that big of a deal. So when you make certain decisions, again, debt, I can go to a college that costs $60,000, has a really cool name, and yeah, maybe it would be great. Or I can go to SUNY school and not have debt. And that decision right there as a young person can literally change your financial future.
Absolutely. Like you said, there are specific niche jobs that you might need a specific type of education for or a particular school or whatever. But for most people, 90% of people that go to college, it doesn't matter. I've hired people in my practice. I skip over the education part. Like I don't even care. Like I don't even look, it doesn't matter to me. It's like, what's your experience? How can you benefit our business and our company? So,
So many possibilities there. Like even here, RIT is crazy, crazy expensive, but they have a 2+2 program where you can go to MCC, pay next to nothing compared to RIT and then transfer into RIT and get that degree and no one will care. You have an RIT degree at half the price that you could have done otherwise. But yeah, state schools, different things. When I went to school, I went to the second most expensive school in the country at the time, and tuition, room, and board was $10,000 a year.
You are old.
I am old. You are old.
I am old. So even then, it was like, was that even a smart decision? But now I would clearly say, you've got to look at the big picture on that. Anyway, you got me going on that one. Anyway, so I'm glad we brought up education too, because that's a huge one when it comes to debt. We have, especially among our young people, and just the debt that's racked up there. So this is where I want to kind of land the plane is, one, I do want to mention again Financial Peace University. Nate, I wanted you just to quickly share how long you've been doing Financial Peace University, how many people have been through it, and why people, you know, what would you love about and why should people be interested in Financial Peace University?
Yeah. So this will be the 12th year that I've been leading that class here at Northridge. There were a couple of years that we did multiple classes a year. So probably about 15 or 16 classes over that time frame. And I would say approximately 400 people have gone through the program. Mm-hmm. Why do I love it? It's pretty simple. I think it's practical advice. The information that is provided is something that most people can relate to, and they can make changes in their lives to start building a stronger financial foundation. And it's proven to work. Mm-hmm. Like I said on Sunday and online and stuff like that, I understand not everybody's going to be a Dave Ramsey fan. The point isn't that, hey, we need to listen to Dave Ramsey. It's he gives practical information and it's applicable, and you can find something in his program that you can change and apply in your life. So I would just encourage people to commit and focus and find something that they can do. It doesn't have to do all the changes at once. Find something to work on, make that next change.
Yeah, I think I definitely hear a variety of opinions, like on Dave Ramsey, but I agree that, I mean, we listened as a group to, his presentation last night, and I can't think of anything out of his mouth that wasn't solid, right? So, but the other thing is, I think people might say, "Oh, it's too restrictive," whatever. And so, you run the risk of being overly restrictive, which means you'll be a little wealthier than you planned. Is the only way I see it.
truthfully, though, like budgets are actually more freeing than they are restrictive. People that have never lived on a budget, they are afraid of that because they are afraid to probably two things. One, to really find out where they're spending their money and to have to make decisions of getting things out of their lives that are wants as opposed to needs. Mm-hmm. But once you put it on paper, you'll probably realize that you have a lot of extra room for the wants. So then if you can just plan on using that money for the wants that you have, you won't feel as stressed when you go do those things. So when Ashley goes to the store a little too often, as long as it's in Drew's budget, he doesn't have to worry about it. Yeah.
I probably still will, but no, I mean, I think that's so true. I just think at the end of the day, we have a lifestyle problem.
We do.
Right. We love our desires and our wants almost more than we love our needs. And I just think, you know, this is why Jesus said to his disciples, if you want to be my disciple, you have to learn to deny yourself. Mm-hmm. And in America, we don't like to deny ourselves, mm-hmm. right? We want what we want, and we are willing to go into debt to have it. We're willing to, you know, make poor decisions mm-hmm. to do it. And so I think realistically, we don't want a budget because we don't want to change the lifestyle, mm-hmm. right? Because we know we're spending. It is more fun to spend 105% of your income than, you know, 90, 80, you know, it is until yes. it catches up with you.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then it's no longer fun. So.
Yeah. Well, Drew, I think that's a great closing thought, but I'll give you the chance to say, is there one last thing you'd say, especially if someone's feeling overwhelmed, and where are we going? We'll wrap it up with that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're feeling overwhelmed, I would tell you what the scriptures tell you. Pray. God, I need your help. Probably at some level, all of us feel a little bit of, you know, overwhelm with money. It's very complicated. But the good news is if you follow God's principles, you can never go wrong, right? I don't mean you're going to be wealthy and rich. I don't mean he's going to shower amazing blessings on you. I'm just telling you, when you follow God's path, you can never go wrong. It will always lead to peace. It will always lead to satisfaction and fulfillment. And it'll be amazing. And so no matter where you are, you can start today following those principles, yep. right? And over time, and with some sacrifice and some endurance, you'll get to where you need to be. So there's hope for you today. We're going to mm-hmm. continue the series next week where we talk a little bit more about trusting God with our finances and what that looks like.
Excellent. Two more weeks. Definitely don't want to miss it. We'll see you next time.